Good morning, everyone, once again. It's good to have you here at Mid-Current Church this morning. We are in week four. We're cruising right along in this series of ours called Hope Quotient, right? I'm assuming most people have heard of an intelligence quotient. That's our IQ. Well, this series is all about raising our hope quotient. That's our HQ. That's been the goal of this series, to raise the level of hope in your life and in my life. I honestly don't know a single person whose life or marriage or career or golf score, if that's where you're at. I don't know where you're at today. I don't know a single person who would not benefit from an increased level of hope in our lives. Hope, we have been saying from day one, is a powerful force in our life. It is so much more than blind optimism. It's so much more than just wishful thinking. Hope is a really powerful force in our life. At the same time, in week one, I said that hope has an enemy. Right, but that hope's greatest threat in our life, it's not death, it's not disaster, it's not disease, it's not Democrats, it's not Donald Trump, right? That it's even more destructive D word than that, than all of that. That hope's greatest threat in our life is discouragement. Right? Hope is a really powerful force in our lives, but discouragement is an incredibly destructive one. And so as a result, staying encouraged and raising the level of hope, doing it whatever we can to raise the level of hope in our lives, it ought to be priority numero uno. Yeah, that's what this series is all about. And the weeks then that followed that very first week, we set out to look at seven foundations that can help us to raise our hope quotient. In the very first week, we learned we had to recharge our batteries, right? We had to understand that no one does well running on empty. Even Jesus himself had to find time to step away, to withdraw, to spend time with his Father, right? And if he needed to do that, then we absolutely need to do the same. Then last week was this. We had to learn to raise our expectations, right? We were saying that we in the church, maybe especially in the church and in the Christian community, in the faith world, we need to start believing again that the impossible is possible, that impossible things are still possible, and that better days are still ahead. Right? We have to raise our expectations on what God can do and wants to do in our lives. If you missed any of these, don't worry. You can always catch up on our podcast. You can jump on our website. If you haven't caught up with them, you're still in good shape. All these stand alone. All of them can help you raise the level of hope in your life wherever you are at right now, and today will be no different. The third factor on this series, the third principle that can help you raise the level of hope in your life, and so I'm really glad that you could be here for it. Let me ask you a quick question as we begin here. Anyone ever heard of the race long ago? Anyone heard of the race that became known as the Miracle Mile? It's all right. I'll tell you a little bit about it here. This is a historic mile-long race that took place between Roger Bannister and John Landy. Pretty fascinating story. Here's a little background info on the race and what led up to it. On May 6, 1954, England's Roger Bannister, he became the first man ever to break the four-minute mile barrier with a mile time of 3 minutes, 59 seconds, and 0.4 of a second. He just snuck in there, breaking the four-minute mile barrier. A little over a month later, this was June 21st of that same year, 1954, Australia's John Landy, he became the new record holder, recording a time of 3 minutes and 58 seconds flat. It's pretty impressive, right? I can't even make it to the mailbox and back in under 4 minutes. These guys are running mile-long races, right? Pretty big deal. So imagine then the hype when these two guys are set to square off head-to-head, mano a mano, in the British Empire and Commonwealth Games in Vancouver, British Columbia, on August 7th, 1954. That the world was watching eagerly as these two guys were set to square off with each other. 35,000 fans actually filled the stadium that day in anticipation of the showdown between these two guys. And I have to imagine that Bannister and Landy wanted to prove to the world and to each other who was the fastest man around. And so what was labeled at the time the mile of the century, that's what it was billed as, the mile of the century, it would soon become known as what I mentioned before, the miracle mile. Because history was yet again made that day as both men, Roger Bannister and John Lanny, both men broke the four-minute mile barrier, making it the first time in history that two men had broke the barrier in the very same race. Pretty cool story. If you're a runner, maybe that's even a little bit more exciting. But that alone is not what makes this race so memorable, at least not for me. That alone is not what makes this race so interesting to me. What helped makes it so much more memorable is how it finished. How this four-minute race finished with just 90 yards to go. That's less than a football field. With just 90 yards to go, John Landy was leading the race. About to prove to the world who was king, and he made the mistake of his life. If this was the mile of the century, maybe this was the mistake of the century. With 90 yards left to go, John Landy would glance over his left shoulder to check on the competition around him. And at that instant, a moment that is captured in a photo here and frozen in time. At that instant when John Landy looks over his left shoulder, Roger Bannister streaks past on the right. And on to victory in a time of 3 minutes, 58 seconds, and 8/10 of a second. John Landy would finish second, just 8/10 of a second behind. You know how long 8/10 of a second is? It's this long right here. I can't even imagine how he'd feel losing this race by 8/10 of a second. I hate losing a hand of Uno to my wife. Or I hate losing at the little matching memory game to my 4-year-old daughter. She's so good and it's so frustrating. I do not like losing, and I cannot imagine how I'd feel if I lost this race like this, 8/10 of a second behind. Landy was the current record holder. He was the fastest man around, and he was all but 90 yards away from proving to the world who was king, but he blew it. He made a costly mistake. He looked back. And so what this story teaches us, and the big idea that I want to introduce us to this morning is this, that no one goes forward well when they're looking back. Right? No one goes forward well when they're looking back. Whether you're running a race, or whether you're driving in your car with your eyes stuck in the rearview mirror, or whether you're trying to press on in life, or to press forward, or to move forward. Through life, through whatever's coming your way, no one goes forward well when they're looking back. Right? When they're not focused on what is to come. And so this thought introduces us to the very next principle, the very next foundation in raising the level of hope in you and me. If we want to be people who are legitimately walking in hope, who are unleashing more hope in our life, we have to learn to refocus on the future. But this is the third principle we have to put into play in our lives. We have to learn to refocus on the future. We have to refocus our eyes and our attention on what's to come. They have to stay focused ahead on what is to come. When we're only evaluating things in life on the here and now, only what's right here, right now, only on what has been, only on how things have gone so far, when that's the only way that we're evaluating things, we will not move forward well toward the things that God may have planned for us, right? It's this kind of thinking, only evaluating here and now, only evaluating what's been. It's this kind of thinking that I think can start to suck the hope right out of our lives. And it's the kind of thinking that will hold us down and hold us back from what God may have in store, from the things that he may be calling us to the things that he might be orchestrating and might be planning in our lives. And so I just wonder how many of us have ever felt stuck like that, stuck in that place, like we're not moving in the direction we hoped we would. Like we're not moving forward like we hoped we would, like we're driving our car with our eyes in the rearview mirror. Right? When that's the way we're going about things, we'll end up somewhere, but not necessarily somewhere on purpose, and most likely not where we were intending to end up. And so when we're stuck in that kind of place, we have to learn to refocus on the future. The good news is the Bible is full of future-focused kind of people. So many. The Bible is full of future-focused kind of people for us to learn from. And so we're going to look at just two of them today. Right? Two people whose future-focused would literally impact generations to come. And their impact, right, their influence and their future focus, their ability to think with a future focus, it hinged on their ability to ask one simple question. And this one question literally would change everything. And if hope is going to rise in us, then we have to begin to ask this very same question, because it very well could change everything for us too. That question, before we even get to these stories, that question is this: what could this become? We have to learn to ask this question in our life. What could this become? We have to be what could this become kind of people. Could change everything. Right? That these two people that we're going to look at in a second, they're never evaluating the present moment based only on what was seen at the moment. Right? But they had faith in what was unseen and what was still to come. They never looked at what is. They never looked at what was and said, "Oof, this is impossible." They never looked at the situation around them and said, "Man, there's no chance here." They never looked at the people or circumstances around them and said, "Well, he's out of luck." Never. This one question would literally change everything for them. They never responded by saying, "This is impossible, no chance, not going to happen." But instead, they found a way to ask, "What could this become?" They were totally and completely future-focused. And we have to be future-focused as well. Because let me just say this, before we get to their stories, let me just say this. When you put faith in God together with a picture of a better future, man, it is a powerful combination. When you put your faith in God together with a picture of a better future, anything can change. It is such a powerful combination, and we're going to see this combination on display in the lives of these two people. The first of these two people is a little-known mom in the Old Testament whose future focus set off a chain reaction, set off a chain of events that freed an entire nation of people from slavery. When she's introduced for the very first time, she doesn't even get a name. She's not referred to by name. It's only in later writings and references to this story that we find out that her name is Jochebed. The deck is really stacked against this woman in many ways. First of all, she is a woman at a time in history when women, sadly, were treated like property. Second of all, she's a Jewish woman, Jewish meaning that she's owned by the most powerful government in history to that point, which was the nation of Egypt. And so she's a woman, and she's a Jew, and she's a slave. And she's a woman, and she's a Jew, and she's a slave in Egypt. At a time when the relationship was at its worst between the Jewish slaves and their Egyptian owners. See, Jews had grown so much in population that had they realized this, had they realized that they were growing so greatly in population, they could have turned the tables. They could have, overthrown this Egyptian government. And the Egyptians couldn't have that. I mean, they kind of saw what was happening here. And so they had to think fast. And so like every cruel, like every totalitarian, like every evil government, they had to figure out a way to keep the Jewish people oppressed, to keep them down, to remind them that they are slaves. So what they decided to do was to kill every firstborn Jewish male and every child. They said that this will oppress them, this will demoralize them, and quite literally, this will limit the number of males that could be trained to fight against them in battle. So literally, they sent orders for the firstborn males to be killed in the entire nation of Israel. But here's the thing. Here's where things take an unexpected turn. The Egyptian owners, the Egyptian government, they underestimated the future focus of one of their very own slaves, a Jewish woman and a mom by the name of Jochebed. They went to kill her child. It was time. And then here is how the story goes in Exodus 2. You can follow along with me. It says this: "Now a man of the tribe of Levi married a Levite woman," right? She doesn't get a name, but we know this is Jochebed. And she became pregnant, and she gave birth to a son. And when she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. We'll just pause really quick right here. Right? She notices there's something special about this child, right? That we all, you know, see our own kids and we say, oh, wow, they're so special. But there was something more here, right? She noticed that there was something special about this child. The Hebrew word that's translated fine child, it's actually the same word that's used when it's written that God looked at creation, everything he had created. It's the same word that's used when it's written that God looked at creation and said, it was good. Right, so this is what Jochebed said about her son. She said, man, he's good. There's something special about this kid. So she was not about to let him be the victim of this horrible Egyptian mandate. And so she took matters into her own hands. She hid him. She hid him for 3 months. Here's verse 3 then. But when she could hide him no longer, she didn't give up. She wasn't saying, okay, now it's time. Well, when she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him, and she coated it with tar and pitch, and then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. And his sister stood at a distance to see what would happen. Verse 5, then Pharaoh's daughter, they're in Egypt, right? Then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe, and her attendants were walking along the riverbank, and she saw the basket among the reeds and sent her female slaves to get it. She opened it up and saw the baby. He was crying, and she felt sorry for him. This is one of the Hebrew babies, she said. Now, this is as much as the story I'm going to read here, right? Some of you know the answer to this. Who is this baby? Moses. You know his name. Right? This is the Jewish boy raised in an Egyptian home who from that place would go on to lead his people out of slavery. And into the land that God had promised them. An incredible, incredible fashion. And it all began. An entire nation of people freed from brutal slavery. It all began with a future-focused mother. Someone operating with faith in God and a picture of a better future. Right, she chooses to believe what this horrible situation could become rather than giving in to the reality of what already was. See, this is the thing. Become? What could this become? Become is always so much greater than is. And I think Jochebed understood this quite well. And if you're not convinced yet, if you're not convinced that Jochebed knew what she was doing and not convinced that she really was choosing become over is, look what's written thousands of years later. Look with me at what's written thousands of years later in the New Testament. Look at how this decision of hers is remembered by those carrying on the faith, by those who are continuing to tell the stories of their faith. Here's Hebrews 11, verse 23. The writer says this, by faith, pay attention to that, by faith, Moses' parents, Jochebed still, you know, doesn't even get a name here, but we know who was behind all this, right? It says, by faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born because they saw he was no ordinary child. They saw he was good. They saw he was special. They saw that maybe he was made for something more. They saw he was no ordinary child, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, they saw he was special, and they were not afraid. That's future focus. That's the power of faith in God together with a picture of a better future. And when you're future focused, you never stop dreaming. That was Jochebed, right? She was completely and totally a what can this become kind of person. And it changed the future of an entire nation of people. She was a what can this become kind of person. She's not the only what can this become kind of person. Jesus was this kind of person too. And I want to look at this. this morning. We could read story after story after story after story of where Jesus looked at current circumstances, you know, looked at, current situations and asked, what could this become, right? They run out of wine at the wedding in Cana, right? Thousands of people, need to eat, and they've only got a few things here, right? Little girls and brothers and loved ones have died and family is concerned, right? And Jesus' response is never like, well, bummer, right? His response is always, okay, well, let's see what this could become. Story after story where this is the case. But I want to look today, I just want to look at one moment. I want to look at the single moment when I think that Jesus made it clear that he was a what can this become kind of person. The writer, gospel writer Mark, he writes about this moment. He writes about this moment in chapter 1 in the book of Mark. And I want us to take a look at it, right? Jesus has just been baptized here in this moment. God has blessed him. God has affirmed him, preparing him for ministry on earth. And now it's time for Jesus to do the work of his Father on earth. But he wasn't going to do it alone. He wasn't going to do it alone, all right? He needed some sidekicks. He needed some apprentices, these guys that would become known as his disciples, right? To help him do the work of the Father on earth, both now and in the days to come, right? He needed an infield behind him, right? He was calling some guys to be on the team. So what did he do? What did he do? Job interviews? Did he hold tryouts? Is he doing Bible quizzes? Is he putting ads out to find the brightest, the most religious, the most well-respected guys around? That's what I'd do. It's like, hey, let's find the cream of the crop. Is that what he does? Not exactly. Look what Mark writes about this moment. The first time that Jesus calls disciples to be his own. It says this, as he was going along the Sea of Galilee, this is Jesus. As he was going along the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and Andrew, the brother of Simon, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. That was their job. That was their livelihood. They were fishermen, not the brightest guys around, not the most glamorous or well-respected career choice. They were fishermen. Here's verse 17. And Jesus said to them, pay attention to this. Jesus said to them, follow me and I will make you become fishers of men. Follow me and I will make you become fishers of men. This was his way of saying, hey, follow me and we're going to do God's work together. And we're going to change lives along the way. But the thing is, these guys weren't necessarily ready for that. That they had no training, that they had no skills in this area, that they had no background in what Jesus was asking them to do. In fact, some of their backgrounds, most would have assumed, would have disqualified them from doing this kind of work, right? The rest of the 12 he chooses, some of them were more smelly, uneducated fishermen, others tax collectors, the most hated guys around, zealots, religious fanatics. Right, he's handpicking these 12 guys to follow in his footsteps, who would learn at his feet, who would go on to lead people, who would go on to teach powerfully, who would go on to perform miracles, but he doesn't choose these guys based on their resume. He's not concerned with who they are or what they've done in the past. He calls these guys out because of who or what they could become. He calls these guys out because he knew of what these guys could become. And they became great leaders. And they became powerful teachers. And in some cases, they became miracle workers. All because Jesus had an unshakable faith in God and a constant picture of a better future. That's future focus. And when you have that kind of focus, when you have that kind of future focus, you never count someone out. When you have that kind of future focus, you never count someone out and you never stop dreaming. Instead, in all moments, in all situations, you learn to ask, what could this become? Things don't look good. What could this become? Curveball thrown your way, knocks you off your feet. But what could this become? So if we want to raise the level of hope that we have in life, in marriage, in finances, in school, in education, and raising kids, right? If we want to have this kind of hope in our life, in a new chapter of life, in retirement maybe, we have to put that very same question on the first page and maybe on every page of our playbook. Because looking at what something can become, it's so much more powerful than what something is at the moment or what it was in the past. Everything can get better when we act on what situations, when we act on what people in our life can become. Not what they once were, not what they've always been. So let me just ask you this question then. Where do you need to ask that question most? Where in your life did you need to ask this question, what could this become the most? What situations, what relationships, what opportunities are you afraid of? Which ones are you ready to write off because you're convinced that things can't get better? They just won't. They never will. Is it in marriage? Is it in faith? Maybe you're trying to reignite a faith or a spiritual life of your own. Is it with financial peace and security in your life? Is it in raising kids? Is it in staying pure in your relationships? Is it in fill the blank? What is it for you? Right? What are you convinced can't get better? And when you come face to face with discouragement in these moments, don't look at what is. Don't look at what has been before. Learn to ask yourself, what could this become? What could faith in God, together with a picture of a better future, what could that produce in the midst of what I'm right in the middle of? When you act with a future focus, when you really decide that become is a whole lot greater than is, can I tell you what happened? Things start to get better, and your future self will thank you for it. This has been kind of my wife's little motto lately. My future self will thank me. And I think that can be a powerful motivator. See, the very first thing that Eric and I do when we get up in the morning is we head straight to the coffee pot, right? Out of bed, straight to the coffee pot every morning. Lately, Erica has been taking some time right before she goes to bed to get the water ready, to get the coffee grounds ready for the morning. So when we come down in the morning, all we got to do is push the button and the coffee's brewing. So she was explaining to me the other day what inspires this new bedtime routine. She said, sometimes it's a pain to do this at the end of the day because I'm tired. It's hard to remember sometimes. I'd rather just call the day. But then she remembers something. My future self will thank me for this. She's going, I know that I'll be glad. 100% of the time, I am glad tomorrow that I did this today. That's some pretty powerful advice, right? Well, when we're tired, when we're stressed, when we're anxious, when we're afraid, when we're in conflict, we need to act right now in ways that our future self will thank us for. Is that hard? You better believe it is. But that's future focus. We have to choose now hope over discouragement every time. We have to choose grace for ourselves over guilt. We have to choose grace for others over blame and holding a grudge. We have to choose perseverance now and grit now over giving up. We have to choose accountability now over isolation and pulling back. We have to choose light over darkness. We have to choose what we can afford over what we want. Why? Because things will get better when we refocus on the future. And our future selves will thank us for it. And we can only make those kind of decisions in the heat of the moment, especially. We can only make those kind of decisions when we have developed the habit of asking ourselves at all times, in all situations, this one simple question: what could this become? It's tough now, yes, but what could this become? Scary now, yes, but what could this become? Doesn't look good now, yes, but what could this become? It's a powerful question that very well may raise the level of hope in you and in me. What can this become? We got to learn to refocus on the future. I'm going to close things up here right now. But before I do, I just want to make sure that everyone here is really clear about one thing. I don't want us to walk out of here without being really clear about one thing. Jesus chose to believe in what his disciples could become, and he does the same with you. Right? His love for you isn't limited. His belief in you, it isn't limited by who you are or by what you've done. It's not limited by, you know, by where you've been or how many times you've gone to church. He's not keeping track of the mistakes you made or the times when you got it wrong. Just like these guys that he's calling out of the fishing boats, he believes in who you are and in what you can become. And I think that Jesus is a what can this become kind of person, because I believe that our God is a what can this become kind of God. See, in the very beginning, God created everything. God created the world, and God created human beings, and he said, man, this is awesome. And then sin and darkness and brokenness enter the world, and then God said, well, this isn't awesome anymore. But he didn't give up. He didn't say, forget it. He didn't turn his back on the world. He didn't count us out, and he doesn't count you out. And because of what Jesus did for you, because of the sacrifice that he made, it means that you don't have to stay where you're at. You're not stuck right where you're at right now, right? You're not defined by the life you've been living, for better or for worse. You're not defined by the life that you have been living. Right? It means there's hope for tomorrow. It means there's still hope for eternity. All because of what can this become kind of God. He looked at a world and looked at people that had gone wrong, and he said, what could this become? And because of it, he was willing to go to great lengths to send his son to die on a cross for us. So what can this become? If you never said yes, really said yes, if you never said yes to that kind of God, to his son Jesus, maybe today is the day to do that. Right? If you never said yes to the life that God has planned for you, one that's defined not by what is, but by what is yet to come, man, don't wait any longer to do that. Your future is too full, it's too promising. And your future self just might thank you. So here's the thing. If you never said yes to Jesus before, but you want to today, I just want to lead you in a really simple prayer. Well, I'll have us all just bow our heads right now. And if this is you, never said yes, but want to today, just quietly to yourself, repeat these words after me. Say, Jesus, today I acknowledge and I thank you for what you've done for me. And I want more of the life that you have planned for me. And I desperately want to become the person you created me to be. So today I say yes to you, to follow you. I say yes to give my whole heart to you, to give my whole life to you, to choose your way and not my own. Would you lead me and would you guide me in your ways from this day forward? And for all of us here, let me just pray together. God, we do give you thanks for this morning. We give you thanks for this chance to be in this place. God, we give you thanks for an incredible love for us. God, that's what we've been thinking about, focusing on this morning, an incredible love that never stops. God, we thank you that you were always a what can this become kind of God. And that because of that, God, our future is bright. Eternity is bright. And so we thank you for the truth that we learned. God, would you help us to be people who ask that question in our lives? Would you help us to be people who at all times know what it's like to refocus on the future? And God, I pray that we might have hope rise in us because of it. I hope that things that feel like they're going wrong just might start to get better, and that hope would rise because of it. Give you thanks for this morning, God. We pray all these things in your name.